Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to The Main Course without Patrick Martins on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Alexis McLaughlin. A little throwback to the old theme music. Thanks. We have Jeeton Studio today. We also have my sisters joining us, Taylor McLaughlin. She's guest producing this episode. And we are really excited to have... Joe, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Joe Carsonell and... Founder, CEO of Toasting the Town magazine.
It's really exciting to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Taylor, hi.
Hello.
Good morning.
Pleasant morning.
Brunched already.
Ooh, good food.
Joe, did you get anything to eat before you came in the studio?
Nothing to eat, but plenty of good-looking food here at Roberta's.
With a little shout-out.
Yeah. It's a weird time to have a show. I think it's that noon where it's, I don't know, if you're hungover, you're just starting to nurse the beginning of your day, or just fed from brunch. It's not the worst time. We should have got pizza for in studio.
No pizza before 11.
Oh, yeah, Joe's rules. Joe, we're really, really excited to have you. I want to talk a little bit about what you do with Toasting the Town, and especially who it's directed towards, because I think that that's the most interesting thing. I guess to give our listeners a little bit of a background, Toasting the Town is this online community, and it's an article-driven newsletter. And so it's, you know, dives into the history of, in this case, New York, and tell stories that are interesting to people, I'm sure, that are visiting, but is as you say, targeted towards New Yorkers themselves, people who are already familiar with the city.
Sure. It's, basically tourism inside out, or it's sightseeing for locals. It's far too often that some nice people like ourselves might be sitting around a table, maybe at Roberta's, maybe around a big circle pie, and saying, oh my God, you know, we've lived here our entire lives, or we've been here for the past few years, or whatever the time period is, and say, I've never been to the Statue of Liberty, or I don't know much about different areas of Brooklyn, or I don't know about certain landmarks or places to eat or drink or their history. And what we wanted to do was be that little voice on the side of the table that says, why not? They're right here. It's not just for tourists. It's for people that live here that want to enjoy and embrace their own backyards. So we try to publish short stories that are entertaining and engaging and light to get people excited to go explore.
There's so many interesting stories in New York, too, because it's one of those cities that has so much, foundation, and it's really the landing place for so many different cultures. Statue of Liberty, obviously, Empire State's Building, these like really iconic tourist spots. But then you get into restaurants that have been around for 160 years. And, how do those places, survive? What keeps a place like that, going?
I think, from a business perspective, I think that in this day and age, it's very difficult for restaurants or watering holes to pop up and compete. And there's social media, and there's marketing angles from publishing, from radio shows, from anything there might be to grab everybody's attention. And I think that the embedded equity in any kind of brand like a McSorley's or a Francis Tavern is, why are we going to that place today? Because they've been around forever. We have to go check this place out. And there's a lot of respect, or natural respect, from the consumers for places that exist and survive, and that they are kind of, they're contenders in the book of history. They're contending existing, they're contending surviving, and that's exciting. And the stories that surround them, from Andy Warhol getting his start in Serendipity or George Washington bidding his farewell speech in Francis Tavern are incredible stories, and people want to go to these places and put their hands on the tables or, you know, lean their shoulders up against the walls and feel that vibe or feel that history or be part of it. And I think there's, you know, a tremendous amount of benefit to exist and survive in today's very competitive food and drink scene.
Yeah, I guess it's partly being able to touch history, you know, touch the table that George Washington, you know, had a beer at. And I guess it's credibility. It's like, well, I guess if it's been open 150 years, it can't be all bad.
Absolutely. I mean, Keene's Steakhouse, which our good friends at Toast in the Town and, relevant to an event that we have coming up, which maybe we'll get to later, I suppose, is they have pipes in the ceilings and they have pipes, these clay pipes. And the story goes is that the clay pipes that folks or dignitaries or people that would go to eat a Keene Steakhouse would be in the saddlebags of the horses, and their shoes would smash against the saddlebags and inevitably break the pipes more often than not, as many people were smoking tobacco and smoking
pipes.
Oh, like
smoking pipes.
Yes, smoking pipes.
I'm thinking
pipes.
Fire, like, you know, the sprinklers.
Plumbing.
Yeah. Thank you,
Taylor. I thought you were thinking tartan pipes. I said tartan day was a couple months ago, I think. You know, the Scots had their day already. It was smoking pipes. And if you go to Keene's Steakhouse, which is a beautiful place, which is layered with history, the pipes were actually stacked in the ceiling. They almost look like they form miniature, really small rafters or a layer of lined with pipes, and then they have them in encasings and so on and so forth, and you can go and see.
Were they there because if you would break your, you said you would break the pipe while riding, you would need something.
You would keep your pipe
to
there.
To smoke with,
you'd
yeah.
keep your pipe there, so when you checked in, they'd show you to your table, and then they'd bring you your pipe.
Wow.
That's customer service.
That's why it stayed open.
Great customer service.
Tobacco, and then you can have a little food.
That's right.
That was back when you can smoke inside restaurants. I don't think that, you can do that anymore.
Yeah, no, doesn't exist.
Let's see.
You are not writing all of these histories. You work with a team of people and writers and authors that are contributing to the site and to the articles. Have you ever made a request for something like, yo guys, we gotta do this. I really want someone to find this out.
Originally, I was issuing or ideating most of the kind of story ideas or the editorial pipeline up front, and I wanted as much of my writing team and my writing department and my historians in residence who work with us to shape these short stories to be excited and jazzed up. So I said, sooner or later, I want you guys to be, you know, pitching me or telling me what we're going to do and what have you, because it's about the people that are, you know, contributing or supporting this brand, and it's about us being custodians of history and supporters of one another and getting excited about it. So I've gone from kind of 80% directing it to 80%, you know, blown away by, you know, people that work with me as they kind of come up with ideas or different angles or the knowns and the unknowns. And I think we mix it up really well. I think that we'll hit our audience with stuff that's kind of like the big things that you could find in Skylines, or we'll dig and we'll find different things that nobody's ever heard about. Wave Hill is a beautiful kind of farm or plantation or museum or whatever you might want to call it that's up in the Bronx. And my father grew up in the Bronx. And after we had published that story, he called me and said, it's so funny. I really didn't know that much about it. Almost didn't know that it existed. And Mark Twain had summered there, and the stories that surround New York and the things you can find out from hitting things like that versus your typical Empire State Building story or your typical Brooklyn Bridge story is rather incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. I really don't have personally much experience like in the Bronx. I should read that one.
Not too many people have experience in the Bronx just yet. I don't think Bronx is on its way to Hipsterville for another 3 or 4 or 5 years. I don't think.
Yeah. Not that we're actively saying that we're trying not to, just that we currently don't.
Not that there's anything wrong with the Bronx.
Exactly. Right. Let's make that clear.
That's it.
One of the really cool aspects is being able to eat your way through history. I think also, learning stories, but then being able to experience them, it takes it out of that museum kind of, what is that sterile environment of you just, read this straight from a book. This is how it was. This is because you get to experience it a little bit more. I don't know.
Sure. You can go to different restaurants nowadays that still kind of express menus, which are rather old fashioned. The Landmark Tavern is one of the oldest bars and restaurants in New York. It's, I'll never work for MapQuest in my life, or Google Maps will never hire me, ever.
I was gonna ask, where is that?
I'm lucky that I find the elevator in my apartment building every day. But I believe it's in the mid-40s on the west side around 11th Avenue. And they still serve dishes that they've been serving for over 100 years, like chicken pot pie where the recipe just hasn't really... shepherd's pie and traditional old Irish food, and you can really feel again the history and what longshoremen were eating when they're coming off the docks. Huh. And that's actually kind of a funny story, because in Prohibition, Landmark Tavern was one of the few places that literally just operated as a bar and didn't try to disguise itself at all. Pete's Tavern disguised itself as a florist shop, and there were other taverns or bars or pubs in town where you had to knock 3 times or have a password or something. And the Landmark Tavern had all these roughnecks that were dock workers and longshoremen and all this kind of all these ruffians, I guess, if you will. And the cops back in those days were running around with like billy clubs, and these guys' arms were like billy clubs. And like, we're not going in there to mess these guys up from their brews. Just let them be. And that's kind of funny. So, that rugged atmosphere is on the outside of Landmark Tavern. It's actually restored, and there's brass railings, and there's, really great architectural detail and environmental design, which was fixed up not too much, but it was updated in the earlier days. And it's charming on the inside with this old-fashioned food menu. So, sure. And, McSorley's still serves there. Onion and cheese and cracker splatter, and it's like, hey, I'm coming in. It's like you have two options, light or dark.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny. I'm very friendly with Greg De La Aba and Teresa over there, and it's funny to walk in, and you get the occasional customer who comes and goes, do you have a vodka soda? And they're pretty much ignored or what have you. But menus have helped to transcend.
What is it, McSorley's? Is the light or dark beer? Your choice.
That's lighter.
Can you get them mixed?
I mean, it depends on if anyone's watching.
Yes,
so mix
fair
them
enough.
Up yourself.
Have you had any stories that have surprised you, or any articles or pitched ideas where you're like, and then it just ended up being a richer story?
For me personally, I didn't know that much about the homosexuality and the evolution of it in New York, and kind of what happened in the 70s and
the
Julius Bar.
Yeah,
the Stonewall riots, but the Julius Bar and kind of the wrangling of the press by the gentlemen who went around downtown Manhattan and were trying to deliberately, basically, they had to go into restaurants and just, illustrate in a really minor way or kind of convey that they probably were gay or that they were homosexuals, and see if somebody would stop them. It took them 2 or 3 times to get into, a bar situation where, they were being rejected for service. And I believe that the phrase, the state law, was disorderly conduct. And the question was to bar owners or servers or waitstaff, why are we being disorderly? And I found that to be remarkable.
They were provoking in order to kind of like out these discriminating establishments?
They didn't even have to provoke it. If bar owners or whatnot, particularly down in the Village, would realize you know, these gentlemen are coming in, they're probably gay, or we're guessing that they're gay. They would give them a hard time, and they just immediately, before giving them menus, walk over and say, you know what, you're causing a disturbance in the bar. And it was remarkable. It was a remarkable kind of turning point for the city, that people couldn't come into an establishment or feel uncomfortable and rest their elbows down. And we published a story about Julius Barr and Pride Week, and kind of integrated that a couple of weeks ago. And for me personally, that was it was a great lesson learned, and it was a great experience, because you could isolate these times, whether it's prohibition or whether it's, you know, people giving people a hard time for the way that they are, and finding out that these isolated moments in history are really foolish times, and they're times that it's a luxury that we didn't have to live through. You know, we stand here today. It's great to be alive. It's great that it's the year 2015 and that we can look back at these instances of darker times and say, you know, what a remarkable thing that I kind of am a rather innocent person, where it strikes me as hard to believe that people are giving others a hard time. But we don't focus so much on the negative or so much on the dramatic at Toasting the Town. We try to keep things light, but,
well, it's,
you know,
nice not to ignore it either, though, sure, because there's so much in history that is unpleasant, and is, you know, to look back on it is, you know, a difficult pill to swallow or thing to admit. But it's nice that it's not ignored or glazed over, especially, but you guys are, you try and educate as much as entertain.
We keep things light 90% of the time, but then, you know, when topics pop up and there's things to write about, you know, the game Trivial Pursuit is people and places. If I ever wrote that game or published the Toasting the Town edition, we call it Places and People, because we always write about a place for someone to go visit, and then the people and the character studies that go around it, so that people find utility at the end of the stories that we're writing. They can pop up and say, I read about something, now I can physically get up and go visit it. Yeah. So, you know, when there's an opportunity or an old landmark like that and the stories surrounded are meaningful or dramatic, we'll gladly do that. I will preface that we're not carrying a torch for any missions or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that that we have the opportunity to lighten up the perspectives on that, and to recognize it as a darker time, and then also build up the topic at the same time and talk about things. We're very optimistic. We're never really too negative, if at all, or sarcastic, or, you know, taking shots at things or people, which is a big mantra for the brand.
And, well, New York.
And a difference for a lot of people.
It
sincerity.
It's the high road is a tough one to take, yeah. That's for sure.
Well, and you have a word. Didn't you have a word for exactly what you guys do, a blend?
Sure. It's education and entertainment combined, and we just call it edutainment. So we like it to...
I like that mix. I wish more of my
edutaining
life.
The people.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's like winning at Jeopardy. I feel entertained. I feel satisfied, and I feel educated all at once.
That's right. Trebek does a good job for all of us.
One great Canadian.
Yeah. Well, I want to go to break real quick and then get back to hearing some more stories. So we'll be right back after this, guys.
Let me tell you now a story that your blood will chill to hear. Story of the day when I first met my greatest fear.
You're listening to Hole in the Floor of the Plane by The Sparrows.
I was traveling down flight 66 at 6 p.m. that day. While sitting in my window seat, I felt the floor. Yeah, way. Well, 30,000 feet, sure a long way down to fall. On my way down, I was sure to count them all. Now and then, I sort of did regret my choice to fly. Where I had lost my luggage,
gonna die. It happened to me, it could happen to you. So take the bus or take the train. And remember the day when I fell through the hole in the floor of the plane. As I looked up, I saw a few more poor unfortunate souls who had no one or conscious thought for planes with floors with holes. It looked like they were praying as if God could help somehow. They might have put their seat backs up, but it wouldn't save them now. The end drew near, I closed my eyes and made amends with God.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards and Sons. Edward Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
This is Brooks Headley, the pastry chef at Del Posto in Manhattan, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network.
I think I could listen to Jack talk about meats in that tone all day. That was great. Welcome back to the main course. Joe Carsonell in studio from Toasting the Town. Taylor McLaughlin in studio with us as well. S. Wallace Edwards and Son sponsoring the show, which is really exciting because we love Sam Edwards and the whole crew and their Long H ham. I don't know.
Ham's great.
Have you had Edwards ham yet, Tay?
I don't think so. I'm not sure if I have.
I need to bring some home.
I'm not going to oppose that. Yeah, on a plane, by mail, any way you want to do it, I'll take some.
I
feel about pork.
Well,
strongly.
I can do meat mail because that's what I do for a living.
Love
so.
A meat mail. Love a meat mailing.
No, Edwards is who we were just on the Great Artisanal Ham Tasting,
trip
in California that I was just on. So we went to California, did two tastings, one in San Francisco and one in Napa. 12 hams. Most from the U.S. and then some from Italy, just to try them side by side. It was, you know.
It sounds like a tough trip.
Yeah.
I came back.
The things you have to do for work.
I came back literally pickled.
Yeah. There was a lot of sodium.
I was between the sodium and the wine and the booze and the preserves. I was
fermented and pickled.
I was pickled.
So you have to lay off now till Christmas. That's it.
I was eating ham yesterday.
Yeah.
It's become an addiction.
It is.
It's part of the job though. You know, you gotta, you know.
Well, and it perfectly lends itself to today. I mean, there are traditions in making these hams, just like there's tradition and history in everything you do. So we got to keep having the ham to make sure we're keeping history alive.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We got to get a ham story going out of this. That's it.
Funny.
Pickles have been popping up on my radar all weekend. The Lower East Side is really well known for their pickles.
Gus's Pickles.
But, you know. I say really well known for their pickles, but maybe it's not really well known enough. Have you guys done a pickle story yet?
We have not done a pickle. You're jumping the gun.
But you're planning on doing a pickle story.
We've been pickling around with a pickle story. Pickling around with each other, just kicking it around and eating pickles all the time and talking about pickles and saying, well, what kind of pickle will we get ourselves into with this pickle story?
Too many pickles. It's one of those things. I know that the Lower East Side is known for pickles, but then it stops there.
Right.
They had the tradition. I guess it's also, you know, are pickles part of Jewish culture?
Yes. That's why we have kosher pickles as a commonality. But no, I think they absolutely are as something that's been there, especially pickling for preservation. A lot of the foods that they're consuming,
salt,
of course.
There's nothing about it that is itself kosher. It's actually koshering salt.
Right.
Just knowledge bomb for you since you all were interested.
Yeah. The kosher pickles are kosher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we need a rabbi here to document this conversation.
Yeah.
Or to correct us all the incorrect things.
We're doing a good job butchering a history that you know, travels a millennia, but you know.
I really look forward to the pickle article.
Yes, I will forward that to you guys.
Okay. Well, I'm signed up for the newsletter, so.
Right.
It'll land in my inbox.
If we got you as a subscriber today, then I think my work here is done. I can go.
Well, you're out. Yeah. I don't know if we could do like a shameless plug right now, but since you are a subscriber, how the heck do I subscribe to this?
Oh, you go on toastingthetown.com and it's free and it's wonderful. That's it. That could be a bumper sticker.
It's free and wonderful.
It is. And it'll teach you something. Oi. I mean, come
we
on.
We gotta sign up mom.
Yeah, that's going to be not hard of a sell.
No.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she's not already. She signed up to the, what's the Bay Ridge
newsletter? Oh, there's the Bay Ridge newsletter that she sends me an article, I don't know, weekly.
Taylor and I.
We used to live near here. Like, okay.
Taylor and I have been getting a version of Toasting the Town provided by our mother for many years, where she'll just find not as well-written articles as you're producing.
Many grammatical errors.
And so there's, but about, you know, interesting things in the city, interesting places.
Sure.
How they came to be.
This is a Bay Ridge local.
She prefers the Bay Ridge local as if she's never left the small area. Although she lived in Manhattan, she's lived in Brooklyn, she's lived in a lot of areas and traveled a lot.
Yeah.
But
now she's in Florida, desperately missing.
Yeah, she comes often. Yeah. So no, that's good. But so even more so, I had a question about this: is do you guys get together? Do you have events that you do? I mean, how do you show people the town?
Well, as a matter of fact, we have an event coming up on Thursday.
God, I'm the shameless plug one. There you are. I really like them. I really like a good shameless plug. You're here for a reason. And,
for everyone listening, we are not following outline. That was coincidental. We promise.
Absolutely. I listen to too much Nerdist podcast.
Our event coming up is called the First Annual New York Heritage Salon and Bounty. And that's coming up on Thursday. In about, four and a half days at this point. And it's supposed to be an evening that brings a three-dimensional experience to our audience. It's not an inexpensive ticket. It's about $135 for general admission and $185 for VIP. We have Keen's.
Yeah, but nowadays it's like going out for just a nice dinner without getting the rest of the
right
experience.
100%. That's kind of what we thought about.
I mean, not that it's not. Yeah, not that it's, you know, just in case you miss an amount that you don't miss. Going
no,
out
I mean it's not a small chunk of change, but it's far bigger than one meal. This is a meal.
So
including.
What's going on, or what?
We have over 30 spirit sponsors. That many of whom are concocting craft cocktail recipes that lend their way or pay homage to the spirit of New York, old and new. We have, for instance, Partita Tequila will be making the 212, which is a delicious beverage that I won't get too deep into because I want people to come experience it. We have New York Distilling Hill Rock Bourbon, which is up in Dutchess County. We have Brooklyn Gin from right here in the BK. We've got Keen Steakhouse doing their signature mutton all night with their celebrity chef. Bill Rogers will be in the house. We've got Sarge's Deli serving pastrami and pickles. Absolutely.
Bring it full circle, people.
We've got Sammy's Romanian doing chopped liver and schmaltz all night long.
So it's just like, you know, it's all these people and places getting together and kind of, you know, giving you a taste of many at once.
I would say a tasting event meets an off-Broadway show meets a gala, because we also have honorees in the house like Barry Benepe, who founded the New York City Green Markets. And Barry is one of the most influential New Yorkers of the last 100 years. Many people have heard of Robert Moses or Jane Jacobs. And one of the diplomats in the background that far too many people have not heard of is Barry, who basically and essentially saved the family farmer in the Hudson Valley as wholesalers were, you know, trying to strong arm and build volume relationships with farmers. So, I mean, the phrase farm to table could indirectly be associated with Barry Benepe, and he'll be honored that evening in addition to four other honorees like Dale DeGruff. Dale's the father.
Pioneer.
What's that?
Talk about pioneer.
I mean,
I'm sure.
amazing, recognized. Amazing people. Dale is the father of the modern craft cocktail movement, and is credited never really in the first hand, as he is humble and an amazing person, and basically somebody that all of these craft cocktail bars say they wouldn't exist without this gentleman having pioneered the craft cocktail and brought it back to life after it had been dead. After Prohibition, it started in the 1880s. Prohibition kind of killed a lot of drinking and socializing, and then
don't think about it, but it also killed the culture of sure. You know, behind the recipes and this and that. You lose I guess, what was Prohibition, 10 years?
It's an approximation. I think you're about right.
Yep.
But that takes out all the creativity.
Well,
you're right.
people move, people leave, they take their recipes with them.
Yeah.
It's easy for, you know, traditions and those histories to be lost.
Absolutely. I never really
thought about it like that before.
Yeah.
Well, I think Dale was at the Hotel Bel Air in Los Angeles, and then where a lot of celebrities like to get away, and he was really entertaining them and really providing a unique experience by introducing fresh juices and different cocktail concoctions and recipes. And he brought that forward to New York, to the Rainbow Room, primarily, in addition to other places that he worked, and not only established kind of a reputation for himself, but he really established a trend in the craft cocktail coming back in a big way in terms of making people feel special that they were out. And the way that I've seen him describe it before is that the chef is in the kitchen and might provide your food and do his thing back there, and you're out in the town and you're out spending money at a restaurant and you're buying into hospitality. And he describes himself as the chef on the front end of the house and somebody who is taking care of you in a really kind of catered kind of way up front. And that's what a lot of people want in New York. That's, they want relaxation. They want something special for themselves. So he's a great man, and we'll be honoring him as well. And some others.
I love how obviously interested you are in storytelling or in telling this. Like, it's, you know, you ask a question, it's just like, oh yeah.
Lights up.
Truth. I got something to say, and then, you know, this, and then going on from that. It makes sense.
It's refreshing.
Why you're, you know, bringing these people to you. What about going out with friends, though? Are you, like, out at a bar and someone brings up a topic and you're like, well, guys, funny you should mention that.
Pickles. I know something about pickles.
You'll never believe the story behind.
Well, we didn't have cable television growing up, so we had to tell stories.
Mom was an artist.
There you go. That's right.
Dad was an educator.
Yep.
No cable.
Yep. The channels.
Yeah, not to date yourself. Cable existed
an antenna with tin foil on the top of it. So when the stations flickered, somebody said, somebody tell a story.
Yeah.
Let's go. So, storytelling is fun, and I like to be cheerleaders for people, especially people that are my friends who have shown an interest in what I am or have accepted me as a human being and the DeGruff family as a whole. Leo, Dale's son, is one of my best friends, and I wouldn't be doing the event unless we kind of decided together that we'd be working on events together and trying to do something special where people go to tasting events all the time in the city, or they spend money on expensive tickets and they walk away and maybe they're a little bit hammered, or maybe they, you know, are a little bit intrigued over a dish that they sort of remember. And we wanted to make an evening stand out and have people get this experience of seeing honorees get up. And then we also have some skits going on. We have some actors doing some tongue-in-cheek stuff about Bryant Park, because 'tis the season, it's summertime, so we wanted to do a topic that was fun. I guess 'tis the season would be the opposite in terms of cliches.
Still the season.
Where is the event itself?
The event is at the. See, I'm not good at plugging at all. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm just curious as to where, because I always think logistically, but you know, now that you're getting all of these different people together, what kind of like space requirements do you need to have all this different food in one area and have like skits going on?
It's at the Prince George Ballroom on 27th between 5th Avenue and Madison.
Okay.
And that's 15 East 27th Street, and it's the bottom floor of what used to be a hotel called the Prince George Hotel, which is now
a space with history.
Right.
You don't say.
Absolutely. It's a charming space. It's a beautiful space. The ballroom is a 5,000 square foot ballroom, which has landmark columns erupting into a decorative ceiling. And it's beautiful and it's gorgeous, with these silken wool pressed walls and beautiful wood molding fixtures and design. And then they have a big kind of landmark mosaic tiled hall where we'll have some other tastings going on in the front gallery space, which is a little bit kind of like industrial and unique. And that's going to be kind of our New York tribute area, so that we have New York distillers in there. We'll have Gun Hill Brewing in the house that night, and people can experience what New York has to offer, and then kind of head into the ballroom for big presentations and kind of big recipes or music and
so
by the Nightingale Jazz Band and stuff like that.
So it's really just like a mix of everything. I want to know more about the skits and what is.
Lexi's been stuck on that. I saw as soon as you said it, she was stuck.
Well, I want to know like where they fit in, or I guess are they, you know, is there a time period where they're, you know, harking back to, you know, the stage tradition of New York? Because it's.
Well, I mean, it's if you read a lot of the Toasting the Town stories, there are moments in time that are arbitrary or they're kind of opportunities. When I used to work in design, if we'd look at something, let's say it was a dress shirt, maybe the inside of the cuff would be a design opportunity where you could throw a little bit of flair or something that was exciting. Or when I was a DJ, if you could believe that, back in my college days. And when there was a break in the bass line, that was an opportunity to throw a song on that basically didn't carry as fast or slow a bass line. So that's our opportunities are these arbitrary moments in history where, like, okay, the Bryant Park was a place where in the 30s, I believe, and the 70s was a meeting place for, like, criminals. Because the 6th Avenue elevated subway line, when it was constructed, it cast its shadows and created, you know, these peculiar little spots. And ironically, it's next to the New York Public Library of all places. So we have like two idiot criminals meeting up, talking about some game plan. And they say, maybe we're out in too open space. We should have this meeting somewhere else. And one guy points at the library and says, maybe we should meet in the reference section. And we get very cute and very funny with this stuff that we can take these moments and say, what if this was the conversation going on back there? And that's where that entertainment value comes in. That's where that random humor comes into a lot of what we do. So we have that kind of coming to life through the skits and some of the stuff that we're doing. And then we also have guys from that have performed in the Off-Broadway show Stomp, and they are presenting their interpretations of three topics which basically tie the evening together, which is food, where they'll be performing with like pots and pans and human percussion and bringing out the essence of food through that performance. Drink, which they'll be, you know, showing, you know, everything from cocktail shakers to having a shot during that musical expression, and building of New York with some, you know, big Stanley ladders and hammers and things like that, and making music. So we're very excited about the skits.
Yeah.
Lexi is too.
That's awesome. No,
it grabbed your attention right away.
Bryant Park, I like the 6th train was elevated?
Yep.
That's so interesting.
Well, no, the 6th Avenue subway line was elevated.
Yeah.
Yep.
You learn something new every day. Yeah. Go figure.
Who knew?
History.
Yeah.
Toasting the town.
Exactly. That was like
toasting elevated subways.
Absolutely.
Element. And the criminal. Mm-hmm. That was going to be the title of the brand before we just settled on Toasting the Town. It was easier.
Yeah, I know.
It was cheaper to print. Yeah. Promotional.
That's really what it goes through. We're being charged by the letter.
Yeah. Ink savings.
Joe Carcinell, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and talking with us about some history points and tidbits about New York. If you guys are interested in learning more, toastingthetown.com,
yep.
Is that where they find you?
Yes.
It's awesome. Your favorite price. Free.
And it's wonderful.
Yes.
Absolutely. And it's one. It is. Completely engaging.
And can they find out more about the event there as well if they're interested in going to, what is it, the Salon and Bounty?
The Salon and Bounty, and it's toastingthetown.com/MYHSB, or just go to toastingthetown.com and click on events.
Wow, that's easy.
Keeping it simple.
That's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, show up and have a good time. And if you don't show up, then I'll see you another time.
Yeah.
It's the end of that.
Well, we look forward to hearing more from you. Thank you so much for spending the Sunday with us.
Thank you guys very much.
Happy Sunday.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.